Today's January 18th, 2026. Current Bitcoin price is $95,457.
Welcome to the BitByte podcast, your source for news and information about Bitcoin and the cryptocurrency space. This podcast is meant for educational and entertainment purposes only and is not financial advice.
Okay, so what I meant to say, what a difference a week makes, right, Rick?
Absolutely.
Oh, man. Yeah. So last time we recorded, we were, what, 90,000?
Yeah, 90,500. Now we're 94,457. So $5,000 increase.
Yeah, and we actually, we almost got back up to, what did we get up to? It was something like 97?
97. I thought it was 97 before it kind of fell off, but, you know, got rejected. But, I mean, it's a lot better than getting rejected from 91 continuously for several weeks running.
Yeah. Because I think last week when we recorded, we were talking about, you know, this was feeling a little bit different. Like, we may have something that was going to continue, depending on what happened with the close, the weekly close that took place. And obviously, it looks like we got a nice little upswing. There was a lot kind of going on in the news that we'll touch on a little bit more in the episode. Talking about that, back in pretty good range, been mid-90,000s. What are our theoreticals looking at?
So theoretical one purchased back in 2023, October 2023. If you would put $3,000 down, you could have purchased 0.0885 Bitcoin. And that $3,000 purchase is now worth $8,448. So doing pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah, from $3,000, man, that's...
Yep, I mean, that's even doing better. I mean, previous week, it was right at 8,000, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's a pretty good swing up. Second theoretical purchase right at the halving has been... I wouldn't say it's been super disappointing, but it's not been as gangbustery as previous halving prices and what they would see. So, in October 2024, you put down $1,000, 0.0156 Bitcoin would have been purchased. And today that is worth $1,493.
Yeah.
And so basically it's 50% gained.
And just for people that maybe they haven't been listening to us for as long as we've been doing the show, but the reason why that other purchase was made right at the halving is because typically we expected to see the exponential gain right before the end of the blow off top.
Yep.
And so we were like, well, what's it going to be like? So we were like, okay, well, let's do the theoretical purchase and just we'll track it and see where it goes. I still think the best one that you called was that $3,000 one back in October of, was that 23?
Yeah. And there was strong rumors throughout October that the ETFs were going to be put in place because BlackRock was in charge of it. And then somewhere in late October, it was confirmed in... You know, Bitcoin's price was about $37,000 at that point.
Yeah. Yeah, it was just an incredible upswing in the price. I think that was one of those key golden purchases that takes place. Like, that's always like, I mean, when you're looking at Bitcoin, you hear about those stories like, oh, well, how'd you make so much money? I mean, that's one of those times when you bought at that time, like, that's great timing in the market.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's, we're still, obviously we're off for all time high still, which is 126,000. ETFs are looking better this week. We actually had some black coming in. Looks like on the 13th, there was 753 million, January 14th, 840 million, 100 million on the 15th. Looks like we saw a sell-off on, the 16th, which was 394 million, but still a little bit better of a momentum, and considering prices are still kind of holding on. One of the things, and I think this was super important that we kind of, and I don't know how we missed this, was the Clarity Act was going through markup through the Senate Banking Committee. And they were expected to pass it, I think it was like on Wednesday. And then there was discussions that were going on. They didn't quite get it done. So then it was going to move to Thursday. And I mean, this is a huge piece of legislation. We've talked about this back in July. I think initially, whenever we first kind of heard about it, it and the Genius Act were kind of going hand in hand. And I thought it was said and done, but apparently it wasn't. So that was my bad. But this is going to be the final markup before it was going to go to vote. And then once it gets voted on there, it would have been signed by President Trump into law. And it hit a brick wall over typical traditional banking issues, I would say.
Yeah. Can you explain what the issue was?
Yeah. So what's the typical, like if you open up a savings account with a traditional bank currently, what is your interest rate? What is it? It's not even a percent, is it? Or do they give you about a percent?
If you're lucky, you got 1%.
And right now, like with stable coins, typically if you hold stable coins on exchanges, I mean, you're looking anywhere from 3 to 5% just for holding a stable coin. And I mean, it varies, obviously. I mean, it depends on yield farming. They were doing so much of that during the early days of the DeFi projects and They were the index funds or the index projects that were anonymous. I think Solana was one of those. There were so many different ones. SushiSwap. There was a bunch of different stuff that they were doing with. And so basically you were able to yield some or earn some pretty decent yield. And basically what was happening during this markup was traditional banks were going to take all the interest that were being created from the stable coins or all the yield that was going to take place, and they were going to keep it all. They were going to make it illegal basically for mom and pop type investors to be able to earn interest off their stable coins.
Which is pretty dang shady. I mean, I don't really recommend stable coins, but that was at least one benefit you could theoretically have, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And so Coinbase, you know, Brian Armstrong, love him or hate him, he pulled his backing for this. And that's kind of what made everything kind of completely implode. He pulled his backing for this and was like, no, that's not fair. We need to fight for the American people. They need to be able to earn this interest. They shouldn't be penalized. And banks were going about saying, you know, well, we've taken on the risk, yada, 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 just like they do with current loans and those types of things. Because that's one of the other things that Coinbase was going to offer to people is that you could do a Bitcoin loan, right? And you can earn interest on backing or loaning that money to somebody, and you would earn the interest as opposed to the bank. Which
is something. Yeah. I mean, I think that's going to be the future of Bitcoin is people lending it out and earning some money on it.
Yeah, I completely agree. And banks wanted to cut out the middleman on that. And, you know, banks go about they're trying to do everything the way they've always done it. They're trying to say, well, we take on the risk. And it's like, no, you're not. If it's a backed loan, collateral loan with Bitcoin, the owner of the Bitcoin is the one taking on the risk. They should get the reward. And that's not fractional reserve lending at that point.
No. Yeah, and fractional reserve lending is kind of a tricky thing. You know, if you go deposit your money at the bank will loan out most of it and they'll might keep, 10% on reserve. And some people even say there's money is actually created when you deposit your money bank because they'll take whatever your money you have and 10x it, you know.
Yeah.
That's their 10% reserve.
What is it they say? Like if you deposit $100 at a bank, they may keep $10 of that. And meanwhile, they're going to go loan out that $90. And that's just going to continue to split. So the person that loaned out the $90, they're going to take $10 of whatever they loaned, however much they borrow against that. And they're going to create another $90 on top of that or $80, whatever the case may be, right?
Right.
And it just explodes the money supply. And I think go ahead.
Yeah, that's a slippery surface for Bitcoin because there is no Bitcoin's ethic and ethos is really there's going to be no money expansion at all.
Right.
It's like there's only going to be 21 million Bitcoin ever, period, the end.
Yeah. You can't create more. So I don't know. It's weird. I'm glad that Coinbase actually took the position that they did. And I'm surprised, honestly, that Bitcoin hasn't tanked more in price based on the fact that now the vote is delayed. I don't think it's going to die completely because there's a lot of bipartisan movement on this, but they're waiting to see if they can redraft the bill to make it more appetizing for everybody. But they don't want the banks to completely, because basically the banks would shut down the crypto industry at that point. They wouldn't shut it down, but they would control it.
Yeah, well, they'd control it and they'd take a lot of people's reasons to even be involved with it.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially for mom and pop people. This is a chance for people to actually become their own bank in so many ways. I mean, that's one of the big promises of Bitcoin and all that stuff in general, is that this allows you to free yourself from the shackles of somebody else.
Yep.
Your personal sovereignty.
The banking institutions and, you know, and that means all of them, from the central banks, you know, down to the big JP Morgans, Goldman Sachs, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was basically de facto ban on tokenized equities, ban on stablecoin yield rewards, surveillance provisions allow law enforcement to freeze digital assets transactions for 180 days without a warrant. That was all part of this original markup. Weakens the CFTC and expands the SEC authority over DeFi. So basically Coinbase is the one that went in and, I mean, say what you want if you don't like Coinbase or people purchasing on Coinbase. I mean, it's awesome that they went in and was thinking about that. I'm sure, and don't get me wrong, I'm sure they're going to receive something from that. And obviously they want to be part of that DeFi space, right? They don't want the banks to be the only ones that are going to take care of this.
Exactly. And their position in the market right now, I mean, that they're really the biggest. If the interest was going to get kneecapped, I think Coinbase would be the biggest loser.
Yeah.
Of all.
Yep. Yeah. And it looks like the split within the market right now, or within the political sphere, is that Camp A says any regulation is better than none. It looks like Chris Dixon said the bill's imperfect but necessary to keep the U.S. competitive. And then Camp B, the bill is a Trojan horse. So this is where the side that Coinbase fell on. It says Bitwise and several DeFi leaders warn the bill crushes DeFi, eliminates privacy, hands power to banks, and pushes innovation offshore. I don't understand how it pushes innovation offshore, other than obviously other countries are going to be able to take advantage of this, where we're not. We're going to stay stagnant.
I think that would be the case.
Yeah.
It's a whole lot of incentive for everyone else to work with it. And in America, you don't get any benefits. So I do think that argument is true. It rings true to me.
I think this is something it's worth us kind of giving updates on as we kind of move out on this. Hopefully it doesn't get pushed out too far. Maybe they can come back to the table in February and get this pushed through. Otherwise, we're probably going to be looking at something after the midterms before we can get a decision on this.
Yeah.
And that would be kind of unfortunate. But, you know, it's progress. I'm glad somebody blew the whistle. But going in kind of back to that too, you said there was something interesting, because we've been charting kind of silver and gold on here, talking about it from time to time. And silver today, right now it's at $93.
Good grief.
But you brought up something interesting. What were you talking about kind of before we got going?
Well, there were some rumblings on Twitter from what I've seen where different people were looking to wire money to silver, exchanges, you know, that would sell you silver for dollars. And there were some different banks were blocking wire transfers to those silver dealers. And I don't know, it just looked like, you know, with the price of silver just keeps skyrocketing, banks are starting to get involved in basically shadow banning it, correct?
Yeah. And we've seen that. We saw that with Bitcoin in the early days, right?
Yeah.
There were certain banks that, especially like whenever Bitcoin was going into the bull market, like certain banks were not allowing customers to buy with their own money this asset. Too high risk.
They were basically blocking people from the digital on-ramp, as it were. They couldn't send it to an exchange. And now it looks like there's something similar happening with silver right now.
Yeah.
Probably gold too.
Yeah. Yeah, I would imagine so. I mean, and, you know, that was one of the big things. It was the where they were trying to cut the throat of the DeFi market and Bitcoin in general. And so right now they're saying recent surges in silver prices has led to the situation where banks are blocking transactions for purchasing physical precious metals. This has been attributed to the reclassification of bullion dealers under high-risk categories, effectively creating a firewall between fiat currency and real assets.
Yep, the fiat's, I'm telling you, fiat's days are numbered, or it looks like in the marketplace it is. And, you know, we've been watching the explosion in price of gold and silver recently. Bitcoin's actually not done a whole lot, but granted, it's still at $95,000 today.
Yeah.
I mean, we remember a time when it was like basically a dollar and $10 and $200. And it's just been going up and up and up over the past 16 plus years, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's unreal to me to see this market dynamic currently the way that it is. We had a discussion yesterday, kind of all, I was having to do some traveling yesterday. We had a discussion and we wanted to remind people, you know, I was trying to remind one of, a fellow friend of ours. I was trying to remind him. I said, you know, it's not that property values have gone up so much, is that the dollar is devalued that much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people don't understand yep. that still.
Yeah. And that's a great point. And well, yeah, like I said, most people just don't even understand it. I mean, we see inflation in certain goods. You know, right now beef is pretty expensive in America, but we've seen prices go up in general. But the stuff that's easy to make, it doesn't go up. But the things that are tangible, those assets have skyrocketed to a point where a young person has basically no hope of buying a house unless he's getting some type of great down payment from his parents or something like that, you know.
Oh yeah,
it's a totally different world.
So I mean, do you think we'll have Operation Choke Point 3.0 with gold and silver announced next year or next presidential election or something like that?
Well, I don't know. I think depending on the presidential election, yeah, I think they can definitely put something through. But right now they just use their regulatory powers to block it off.
Yeah.
So it's not even a bill being passed. It's just, you know, some type of regulation being put out by, I'm not sure exactly who.
No, I don't know for sure either. I mean, because to me, it should be almost a commodity, but I don't know if it's handled by the SEC, and I think that it is. Especially with gold, I know it is, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, and it goes back to what's going to happen or what is happening here. For those of you that don't understand this, if the money is basically imploding and you're trying to get into a lifeboat, if you're trying to take that money into a lifeboat, whether it's Bitcoin, gold, silver, pick your hard asset. If you can't get your money out of the system, they're basically pushing you off the lifeboat and keeping you on the Titanic.
Yep.
So, I don't know. It's definitely, God, interesting times. That's all I can say. And then the other big bombshell that I think that came out this week was Trump was pushing on Powell. DOJ apparently is bringing a lawsuit against Jerome Powell, which is the head of the Fed right now. And Trump is blaming Powell for lying to Congress about remodeling going on at the Fed. Part of this, and we all know what this stems from, is that Trump wants lower interest rates faster. Powell's trying to keep everything steady. He's not doing exactly what Trump wants, or Trump's not mad at Powell because he's not acting the way he wants him to cut interest rates faster. So to me, how am I supposed to feel other than he's bringing charges against him because he's not doing what he wants? Would you say that's inaccurate?
Yeah, I think that's pretty accurate. I mean, it's kind of funny because Trump is the one who brought Jerome Powell in to the fold back in 2016.
Yeah.
He kept his job through the Biden years. And when Trump came back in, he was like, hey, let's lower the interest rate and get the economy going again. And it's just kind of fascinating to watch this. And, you know, Biden, we saw record inflation in 2021 after Biden took over. And there was a lot of things that Biden did that caused that.
Uh-huh.
But we can't lay it all at Biden's feet.
No, there was a lot of policies that were already there.
Yeah, all the policies that we did during the 2020, you know, COVID lockdowns and all that stuff. I mean, that is really the beginning of everything. And a lot of the money printing that happened under Biden, especially when he gave everyone, you know, direct deposits into their bank accounts, that was pretty wild.
Yeah. Well, and so, and I've got to ask you this question, like, in your opinion, do you think that Powell has ever been political with his either rate cuts or increases? Or do you think he's tried to be fairly out of the, you know, try and be an unbiased?
Well, I can't say that he's unbiased because I don't really know him or his heart. But, I mean, I think he's trying to do things to keep our inflation from getting away from us because he watched it go nuts.
Yeah.
I mean, that happened under his watch and he did start increasing interest rates. But yeah, I'm thinking he's just trying to hold this together. And just with the congressional budgets, you know, their spending versus the tax dollars that they're getting in.
The big, beautiful bill.
I mean, there's money printing going on anyway. Yeah,
oh, yeah.
Big, beautiful bill. Yeah, no.
No, I completely agree. Sorry, I was taking a drink of water there. But I don't know. And I think what Trump is getting him on, like I said, is renovations on the Fed building, which we've talked about this before, and I want to bring it up again. Why, oh, why are we paying renovations for a Fed building when that is not a federal government bank? Is that the best way to put that?
Yeah. It's not a federal entity. I mean, it's the Federal Reserve, but that's kind of the biggest misnomer ever. It's neither federal, nor does it reserve anything. So it's a private monopoly that has a you know, the ability to print dollars and control interest rates and all sorts of things that have grown in the past, I don't know, 115 years or, I don't know, it's 113, if my math is correct. I think it was 1913 that it passed.
Yeah. No, I think that's about right.
So, you know, its power has grown over the years. And I mean, who is paying for that? It's a private company. But are we funding that?
It was paid by a tax payer dollars.
Yeah. I don't know. It's kind of fascinating. Yeah, it's just something I like to bring up because, you know, it's... The Federal Reserve is not federal.
No.
No.
Absolutely not. And the fact that, I mean, their mandate is to watch over unemployment and to keep inflation at 2%, like that is their mandate. So even if we had deflation through abundance, if it was, you know, if there was technological increases in abundance that was able to push down inflation to below 2%, they would try and find a way to inflate prices to get it to at least 2% again. So keep that in mind. Like they want it. They want to continue inflating that currency. Because technologically speaking, everything should start going down in price as everything kind of gets more efficient and produces more and more and more.
Yeah. As the economy grows, it should be a lot cheaper to produce stuff.
Yep.
And then the only thing that really goes down in price is TVs.
Yeah, for yeah, whatever
like,
reason.
Like that.
TVs, and they have gone back down to pre-COVID levels, or at least they're back in kind of that same ballpark again. Because they went up there for a while, like everything went up, right? But it seems like, I don't know, I mean, I remember pre-COVID levels, I think a $300 TV for 65-inch was a pretty good price. And I think you can do that pretty easily again now. Obviously, the technology is slightly different. That's the other thing they keep on doing, right? Like, they're like, oh, this is a new updated model, so we can charge you a little bit more, or at least the same price as what it was previously. But whatever. Yeah. I don't know. And now we've got two different people that Trump is trying to select for to replace Powell, and I think that's looking to happen this summer.
Yeah. And what was some of the backgrounds on the people?
Both of them are just like, I don't know, tinfoil hat time.
The swamp creatures?
Yeah. Kevin Warsh and Kevin Hassett. It looks like they're the ones that are leading the markets right now. Like if we look at the poly market accounts. Right now, so Kevin Warsh is showing 59% likely to get it. There was one on here that was Christopher Waller. I didn't really look at him, but Kevin Hassett was the other one that was kind of picked earlier. And I think he just recently got replaced by Warsh. So Hassett, I mean, these guys, they've been around for a long time. I guess they're older than what I would actually think. But Hassett began his economic career at Columbia Graduate School for Business. He was an assistant professor of economics from 1989 to 1993. Associate professor from 93 to 94, from 92 to 97. He was a senior economist in the Division of Research and Statistics at the Federal Reserve Board of Governors. He served policy consultant to the United States Treasury Department during George H.W. Bush and Bill Clinton administrations. So we know already he's been playing the political game up there for a while, and it looks like he was playing on both sides. But that's not uncommon for bankers, right?
No.
Now our other one, and this is the one that's newly becoming more popular, is Kevin Warsh. This one's a gem. He was currently Shepherd Family Distinguished Visiting Fellow in Economics at Stanford University's Hoover Institution, a scholar lecturer at Stanford Graduate School of Business, a member of the Group of 30. And do you know what the Group of 30 is?
No,
I don't either. I'm going to have to look do some research on that one. A member of the panel of economic advisors at the Congressional Budget Office, a former steering committee member of the Bilderberg Group. What is that? Oh, what is that? He has conducted research in the field of economics and finance and has advised several private and public companies. What a gem.
What? Wow. That one's a real swamp creature.
Yeah. It sounds like he's the pick though, because it looks like Warsh was reported as leading candidate along with Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent to be nominated to succeed Jerome Powell. I don't think Trump will let Scott Bessent move. I think he likes him too much, being his economic strong arm. So yeah, I'm more than likely it'll be this Warsh guy. Bilderberg Group of 30. Legitimately, I don't know what that is. Let's see.
I don't either, but. Now it sounds like a lot more sinister after you hear Bilderberg.
Oh, okay. It's the G30, international body of financiers and academics, which aims to deepen understanding of economic and financial issues and to examine consequences of decisions made in public and private sectors. Sure.
Yeah, sure.
Sure. Yeah, sure. Man, interesting times. May you live to be an interesting time, sir. I think I got the quote wrong.
It's some Chinese proverb about that. May you live in interesting times. That's right.
Yeah. I think we're there. I don't know, man. I'm like, God, we're in such a mess. And the life rafts, like considering that we got people playing the violin on the Titanic right now. And like people are not letting you get on the lifeboats when there's plenty of room. It's good times.
Yep. Yep. Well, I can tell you what, that just means the people who do have Bitcoin is going to make it more valuable.
Yeah. Yeah.
But,
go ahead.
But you don't actually own your Bitcoin until you have it on a wallet.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I completely agree with that. So, yeah, don't leave it on exchanges. Try and get it off there. I don't know. Was there anything else you wanted to bring up? I really wanted to talk about that Clarity Act news because I was like, man, that is such BS. Do some more research on that if you're curious. Like anybody out there listening, do some research on that. Like understand really what that means with the DeFi and the yield and actually being able to earn your own interest off of your own risk, basically.
Yeah. Well, you know, this portends to me that in the near-term future, price will probably go down if they're kind of trying to seal off the exits.
Yeah.
And then, you know, screw over, seal off the exits for gold and silver, remove interest rates from stable coins. That's going to not be good long term, or it's not going to be good short term, I think. But, I mean, you don't start doing that stuff unless the dollar is looking pretty shaky. You know, if you're confident in the dollar, you wouldn't care about that. So that's the other flip side to it. So
I agree. Yeah. I mean, basically, this is the government saying you're too stupid to be able to know what's best for you. We're going to make sure
that you don't buy this crap because it's crap.
Because it's crap.
Here, it's crap. We'll now, buy here, take our crap.
take our crap instead. You cannot buy the real asset with this fiat money.
Yep.
Remember, fiat is by decree. Anything else you want to bring up?
That's it for me.
Same here. Thank you again. We've seen an increase again in listenership. Spread the word. Tell your friends. I know sometimes we're not always the best spoken people out there, but we're real folks just like all of you listening. So we appreciate
you. And we're not mouthpieces for any organization, political party, et cetera, et cetera. We just speak for ourselves.
I speak for Satoshi, sir. We're all Satoshi. Yeah. No, yeah, we're completely like, we don't get money for this. We do this because we're concerned about it. And we wanted to make sure and expose as many people to it as possible. Yeah. So thank you.
Bye.